I've been watching hockey since as long as I can remember, since I was, you know, a little wee guy.
Your home for hockey talk in the Twin Cities.
I've been watching hockey all through the 70s and 80s. I mean, that's all I did.
On the Ice, hosted by Pete Wagner and Chad Graff.
You know, even before my parents deserted me, we used to watch hockey together.
We'll cover Wild, Gophers, Prep, and any puck topics you want to talk about.
Yes, I did want to play in the NHL my whole life. And, you know, I thought if I ever was able to, you know, pay the registration to get into real minor hockey, I think I might have got, you know, I believe I might have went to the show.
Hockey Talk on the Ticket right now. On the Ice on Minnesota's Sports Radio. 105 The Ticket.
Kids, never do this. This is one of the most dangerous things in hockey. You poke the bear.
Intercepted by Hagelin. His shot is tipped in by St. Louis. Brassard plays down low. Nash scores from a sharp angle. He beats Dubnyk. Granlund gains the zone. Drops to Dumba. Dumba on the backhand. Centers. He scores! Wild control, double from Fontaine, Mannix scores! McDonough fires, tip, they score. Coyle has it, centers, and Pominville whiffed on a one-timer! And the Rangers escape St. Paul with a 3-2 win!
What a game, Chad Graff. The Minnesota Wild, New York Rangers, a possible Stanley Cup final.
Ooh, preview. Bringing that out already.
Yeah, pulled it out of the holster and fired it away. No, welcome to the On the Ice radio show along with Chad Graff and David Helmer. I'm Pete Wagner. And that was a great game against the Rangers. Didn't get the result they wanted, but the Minnesota Wild, New York Rangers really rolled up their sleeves and went to work.
It was a fast game. Both of those teams can really skate. And I mean, even when, you know, scoring chances weren't there, it just felt like there always could be a goal because of how quickly both teams entered the zone.
Rangers not flashy, but good.
I was incredibly the whole time this season I've been thinking Tampa Bay Lightning have to be the team that come out of the East. Holy smokes,
this
the Rangers are really good. They are out. I mean, you look at their lineup, they've got four lines that can play, that they're top number. Their defense is outstanding. Ryan McDonough had a point coming back to St. Paul as the captain of the New York Rangers. Obviously, their goaltending is second to none. They're a very, very good team.
Well, and the goaltending was really, it was Talbot that got the job done while Henrik Lundqvist was out for a couple of months. But, you know, Lundqvist is a big man.
Who'd have thought you could have Lundqvist and have a 1A, 1B thing? It's not even he's the guy.
Well, I felt for a while that his game might have been slipping, but it didn't look like it was last night or the other night on Thursday night. He was a difference maker. He's so good with his pads, and he gets from east to west very, very well, and I thought was a difference maker in the game. But one of the things that stood out to me was, and I got to talk about this rule, I cannot stand the clear it over the glass. They stop players from who are in deep trouble in their own zone from turning and rifling it over the glass back in the day of the 70s and 80s and 90s. Okay, that's been effectively stopped. But that puck, they're already on a four-minute high sticking. It drew blood as a good gasher. Right.
Fair. Yes,
that's the rule. Whether you like it or don't like it, that's the rule. And then there was a bouncing puck. And literally, it's bouncing. It one hops off the ice. And it was a Kyle Brazziak?
I think it was Ryan Carter.
Okay, yeah, Ryan Carter swung at that puck, and I don't even know. I mean, it has to be a perfect contact to get it up and out of play. I'm sorry, but that can change. That is absolute. It's to me, that's not a black and white call.
Would you want that rule changed? I mean, how would you change it for next season?
I would change it to an intent call. So here's an example. Hooking.
Yep.
That's up to the referee's discretion, isn't it?
Right.
So this would be if I take a puck off the end wall and I turn and open up and I'm looking right at the glass, and even if I try to chip it off the glass but I miss, that's a penalty. That's fine. It's on me to hit the glass. I'm the professional here, right? Now, if I'm battling for a puck while I'm shorthanded making a hell of a play and it happens to go up, that is not a penalty. It was not. He was not rifling it out of play.
It was a weird, almost like a baseball golf swing down low, and just connected with it. Next thing you know, the Wild are 5-on-3. Kyle Brodziak did a great, great job without a stick, which I think was broken off the faceoff. Oh. He was out there from the beginning without a stick.
Blocked two shots.
He was tremendous, and that's what the Wild penalty kill has done all season. Even when they gave up a goal, you know, Rick Nash, of course, had the power play goal, and it was a, you know, a typical Rick Nash from nowhere tough angle goal. They were still outstanding. The penalty kill was.
You know, when he was down on one knee, the curling U.S. curling team was trying to get a hold of Brodziak.
They needed a new skip.
But then after they saw him whiff on it twice, they said no skip.
Never
here.
Mind.
Yeah, we're out. Stay there. But I do think though it was one of those moments which was a turning point, and I felt as though. Boy, that penalty kill did prove why it is tops in the league and so good. And it, you know, like it doesn't matter what interchangeable parts you have, but that was a really positive situation. And you know, one of the things that I want to play a clip here, and this is just more self promotion on my part because I believe this firmly, and I never believed that the former Vancouver Canuck coach Alain Vigneault and myself would be 127% on the same page. Can you play this cut, please?
Third period and how you were able to weather that storm?
Well, I mean, for sure, I mean, that team's got a lot of skill and speed, and then the third, you know, down by a goal, they were going to have a push, but, you know, I thought for the most part we handled it fairly well, and I like our push after they scored. I mean, the steps line came back with a real good effort, nice tip in front of the net by JT there, and we were able to weather the storm with a couple minutes left.
You have the best road record in the league. What is it about your team that has enabled you to play so well on the road this season?
Like I've mentioned many times, I don't think there's, you know, a road way to play or a home way to play.
What?
There's just one way, and you got to play the right way, and we try to do that every time we step on the ice, whether we're in front of our fans or on the road.
Point of that is it's playoff time. Every game should be played like the road game. We've heard so many people talk about within the organization. Every game's a road game. And I thought, boy, I've never been more validated as an announcer.
Alain sounded like you there. I almost had to look up and try to figure out who was talking.
Even with the minor French accent, you're calling me a Frenchie now. That's perfect. But I do believe that that this is the way these games are now. And, you know, there's just so many one-goal games. And, you know, I felt as though the Wild actually responded quite well, very concerned about the layoff and how they're going to look. And you could tell that they were not up to New York Rangers' pace for maybe the first 12 to 15 minutes of that first period.
True. Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, this was a game. It was a loss. But for the Wild at this point in the season, likely, you know, Winnipeg's not going to catch them. LA's not going to catch them. Calgary's not going to catch them. They have the top wild card spot. But on the flip side, they're not going to catch Chicago or St. Louis or Nashville in the Central Division. So it's this weird time where they pretty much know where they're going to be in the playoffs with, what, five games remaining this season. So it's this weird time where, you know, they need to make sure that they're playing well, but at the same time, the result, like if they lose a 3-2 game against a very good New York Rangers team, it's not the end of the world, and it doesn't really matter. Sure, of course, a result matters, but the bigger thing for the Wild these last 10 games or 10 days is that they're playing well, and I thought that they did do that against the New York Rangers.
And we're going to talk about a little bit later on in this broadcast, too. We're going to talk about the crowded house. We should come out with some crowded house music for that segment, but there are a lot of players. Nate Prosser's coming back, and I didn't get that clip to David Helmer, and I apologize to you for that. But there was a very interesting, and I felt worthy piece from Mike Yeo talking about Nate Prosser's play. And not only being, you know, the best segment of the year prior to his injury, but the best of his career. And I cannot argue that. I totally agree. And he said he's been one of the best stories on the season. A guy that was cut, basically, to St. Louis, who didn't have room for him, who was picked back up because it's a known commodity, maybe for depth type of play in Iowa, maybe here. And now here he stands. And he's, you know, you said he's sometimes top four.
It's been amazing, especially when you consider last season, Nate Prosser was scratched on a regular basis because the Wild felt he couldn't play on the left side. This season, out of necessity, they put him on the left side and just cross their fingers and say, hopefully he can get us a few games and we can kind of reevaluate and go from there. They put him on the left side, and he's so good there that he gets every single game. And then once injuries occur, he was playing a top four role, this pre-Matt Dumba. And of course, you know, he had the injury, but this has been an outstanding season for Nate Prosser. It was a 1-year contract, of course, because it started with St. Louis. They cut him, the Wild claimed him off of waivers, but If there are teams that still have any doubts about Nate Prosser, I can't understand why.
You know, Devin Dubnyk obviously gets a Masterton nomination for the perseverance of the game and sportsmanship. And if he was not part of this organization, I mean, a Nate Prosser would have to be considered for that.
Nate Prosser was considered. Zach Parise was considered. Ryan Suter was considered. I think that Devin Dubnyk, though, was the obvious choice. I think that Devin Dubnyk has a chance to win the award. The Wild had Josh Harding win it 2 years ago, and now Devin Dubnyk has been such an incredible story.
Would you agree he has to win something? I mean, whether it's Vezina and Price, well, there's a chance that
Devin Dubnyk comes in second in just about every major award. He's in the Hart contention right now, and I don't think he'll win the most valuable player. I think Ovechkin and Price are probably 1-2 in most eyes, but there's a very legitimate chance that Devin Dubnyk is 3 in MVP, 2 in Vezina, top 3, maybe 2 again in Masterton. He's going to be right there at all these things.
How could he not win that one? But from the Hart Trophy, okay, fine. Carey Price has probably been the best goalie, right?
I mean, well, the tough thing from Dubnyk's part is that what Dubnyk has done and what he's meant to the Wilds since he's been here has been outstanding, but Carey Price has done that all season.
Yeah, I suppose. I was just going to say who's had the bigger impact, because Carey Price, his team's been in the playoff hunt from day one, and they've been what they are. The Wild were on the fence, basically held out to pasture, and the impact, I think, has been grander. I think their impacts have been similar as far as what the teams have benefited, but I'm just thinking impact. But I agree, there's no way he's going to win that Hart, but that would be my argument for a first-place vote for that, I think.
But, I mean, how amazing is it that he's even considered? This is a guy who was traded for a third-round pick on January 14th, an afterthought, a guy who maybe he'll, you know, people were looking at it almost as a negative, some fans, whereas, oh, great, this guy's going to help us win a couple games, and we're just going to miss the playoffs, our draft position's going to be worse. To go from that to Devin Dubnyk, who has the Wild as, according to Las Vegas, the third best odds to win the Stanley Cup,
I mean,
it's remarkable.
When you look at some of the teams that are ahead of him, 103 points for Nashville, St. Louis, 102 for Chicago, 107 for Anaheim, and that's just the West.
Right.
You know, so there's some teams that have been very, very good throughout the year, and that's quite a statement for the Minnesota Wild. Now, a lot has to happen. Obviously, I pulled it out of the holster with the preview. Between the Wild and the New York Rangers, that might be a little bit aggressive, but there's every reason to believe if you're in Minnesota, this team can and should win a first-round matchup regardless who they play, even though I'm concerned about Anaheim.
Anaheim definitely worries me, and what is worrisome for Wild fans is last night, Friday night, was not a good night if you're trying to avoid Anaheim. Anaheim lost, keeping them from pulling away from the pack. St. Louis won, Chicago won, so now you've got this group of three Central Division teams, all with two games in hand on Anaheim, and if Nashville and St. Louis win their next two games, all of a sudden they're right there with Anaheim. So it's amazing to me that there is what
it could be a central team that gets the number one seed in the West yet.
Absolutely.
Based off games in hand, tiebreakers, and things like that. Now, if the Wild beat St. Louis, that knocks them out.
Well, the Wild partly control this, because left this season, the Wild play at Chicago, at Nashville, and at St. Louis to close it up.
If they win in Nashville, win in St. Louis, then they know they'll see one of those two teams.
Right. Or potentially Chicago.
Yeah. How would they... Chicago, you think Chicago's going to win?
Well, I think Chicago is right there. They're only 1 point behind both St. Louis and Nashville, and they've got the same amount of games played. It's possible Chicago could be... Well, wouldn't it be only too fitting, though? The Wild, if they're going to do anything this playoffs, you know, they have to go and make amends and try to beat Chicago, the team that's knocked them out of the playoffs the last two seasons.
I'm convinced that the Minnesota Wild last year were better than the Chicago Blackhawks, and I'm also convinced that this year they're better than the Chicago Blackhawks. I'm sick of them. They just bug me.
Last
From Andrew
year,
Shaw all the way down, just get out of here. Leave.
That was such an even series that a lot of people don't recognize last season, that second round series.
Take your bad goal song and get the hell out of here is what I say. How's that?
That's pretty good. I like that.
We're going to come back with more as we're going to hear from Devin Dubnyk. He had a great interview, and we're going to pick up on that as we have more with the On the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Little crew for you here today. Dave Halver, you're all smiles over there. How come?
I haven't heard Motley Crue in a while.
That's why I thought I was digging through the old iTunes playlist of mine, and I said, oh, here's a good one. Just letting it go. Devin Dubnyk was on the air with you yesterday. Chad Graff, of course, this is the On the Ice radio show. Thanks for joining us here on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. And you were at the practice. Very tough to get players, you say, because it's a different environment when they practice over at the St. Thomas Academy rink.
Well, I think it was because the Swarm are at the X, or were at the X last night, so the Wild weren't able to practice there where they usually do. So sometimes they'll go over to Braemar and Edina. Yesterday they went to St. Thomas Arena and out at the college campus, and so it's a fine setup there and everything. But the locker room wise, nothing of course is big enough for the NHL locker room and the guys that they have. So they're all separated into three or four rooms. So I was trying to find somebody to talk to for this segment, and I see Dubnyk sitting alone. So I go over there, but of course that doesn't last long. So before I know it, you know, there's a horde of media people and cameras in his face, and everybody wants to talk to him. And so the funny thing is I'm doing the interview and I keep hearing like all this noise in the back. And so I shut the recorder off and I walk away from the interview, and Jared Spurgeon goes, who had come in during the interview, goes, could you hear my socks coming off, or the tape of my socks coming off? I said, could I hear it? It was the only thing I could hear. I couldn't hear anything Dubnyk was saying because of that. So he was just joking that he might have to be listening today to be able to hear his tape sock become famous.
It's the classic.
Yeah. Well, what I told him, it was like a Band-Aid. Rather than just ripping it off in one strong thing,
pieces,
he quietly tried to rip it.
He was
so respectful about it, but you can still slowly hear the tape coming off the sock all the way around. It was good.
Well, let's listen in. This is a great interview. One-on-one with our own Chad Graff and Devin Dubnyk.
Thanks for joining us, Devin, on 105 The Ticket. Just to start, how crazy have you had a chance to, in this recent stretch with some time off, have you had a chance to look back and reflect on how crazy everything's been the last couple months for you?
Yeah, it's been good. You know, I try to do that each day that we have off. I think it's good to really enjoy the wins that we've been having, the success we've been having. You know, these have been important games for us for a long time, and we're playing real well as a group. So it's nice to sit back and enjoy that, and I'm sure we all did on the time off, and everybody's excited to get back at it in the last stretch here.
I know you've said that you don't like to think about the awards too much, but of late, awards of the month, Masterton Award, that they've piled up for you. What has that been like for you?
Well, it's exciting. You know, it's been a lot of fun as a group here. You know, the personal accolades are nice, and it's certainly nice to be talked about for the right reasons, and I think more than anything, it's just really fun to be part of a group that is as close as we are, and that works as hard as we do every single game. For me, it's just been real special to be a part of a group like this.
What has it been like mentally the last 2 months, where every game just means so much in the standings?
You know what, it's been good. It's been makes it easy to check into those games. You know, if you're a little tired on the back to backs, or your body's hurting a bit. You know, we've known that there's no game that we can afford to give up any points in, and I think we've all done a really good job of maintaining that and understanding that every single time we hit the ice, we need the 2 points, and we've earned a lot of games, and it's been good. We put ourselves in a good spot here, and we got to win a few more here going into the end of the year.
What about you personally? The family's been in town since early February. How do they like life in Minnesota? What have you guys been up to away from the rink?
Well, it's been great. You know, not too much. Just try to keep the little guy entertained. He moves a lot and doesn't get entertained by one thing for very long. So it's just warming up now, so we can get him outside and get him moving around. But the city's beautiful, and the fans have just been awesome for us. So it's been a great place to play.
5 point cushion with 5 games to play. Are you one of those guys that checks out the standings much and pays attention to where you guys are at?
Well, I'm always watching. I think most people are, as much as they'll tell you that they're not. I don't like to think of it as a cushion. I don't think that's a good way to think. I think we'll keep the exact same mindset that we've had, and that's that we need every single 2 points that we can get. And we've done a real good job of that last night. Certainly could have gone the other way. We played a pretty good hockey game, and we'll get back at it on Saturday and keep winning games regardless of points. We want to have a good feeling going into playoffs when the time comes.
Thanks for joining us, Devin.
Yeah, no problem.
Great interview, and this is a guy who's really grounded, I think would be the terms I'd use, and focus doesn't really get let the highs get him too high and the lows get him too low. I'm sure at some point, Chad, that he had some lows keeping him down last year, but but as at least for this year's perspective, I think his just demeanor has been so calming. Would you feel that coming from him in the room?
Absolutely, and he's one of those guys that, you know, is appreciative of everything, is appreciative of all the wins. I think truthfully, and this is not just, you know, what players say, but truthfully, I think that he learned a ton last season. I think that he was humbled quite a bit last season, especially being in the AHL at the end of last season when every player wants to be in the playoffs. He was in Hamilton, Ontario, playing in the AHL. So he was very much humbled, and I think that at the end of the day, he'll say that it did do wonders for him. I mean, this is what turned around his career. He's been outstanding this season. As we were talking about in the first segment, this is a guy who is in the Hart Trophy contention. So it's been quite the turnaround for Devan Dubnyk.
Well, and a big, big story to this team. Let's move on to another topic. We were talking about the Tyler Seguin video. Dave, did you get to see it yet?
I saw the very, very beginning.
Nothing really.
Yeah.
What did John Buchagras say about Peter Chiarelli when he tweeted that out?
John Buchagras, the SportsCenter anchor and big hockey fan, tweeted something along the lines of, "This is the stuff that gives Peter Chiarelli nightmares." And of course, it's Seguin dangling and doing all of these incredible moves, and he's just blossomed into a star.
Boy, he's really been a key component in Dallas. I think if Dallas could get their goaltending situation squared away, I've never been a Kari Lehtinen guy. I wasn't when he was in Atlanta. I don't see what would change now, and I think that's coming to fruition. If they had some semblance of a goaltending stability there, wow, they'd be a solid playoff team again, but they're going to have to address that. But the point of the video is, so he's got three pucks,
right,
and he's keeping them moving with skates, stick, feet, the whole thing.
Kicks one ahead, dangles the other two, and then brings in the third into play.
All in a fluid motion, right?
And this is, you know, what the NHL is doing, where they put the GoPro on top of the star players.
Really cool.
And it was outstanding. I've seen Kane's is very good. I think Crosby did one. They're all terrific, but Seguin's is
the best.
Whew, and it's amazing to think about how young this guy is. This is, you know, what is he, 21 or something?
Yep. Now, he was moved from Boston because of what?
Well, he was moved from Boston. It was after they won the Stanley Cup. He was a part of that team, and he went on a big partying spree. He was with
underage.
Brad Marchand. The two of them were 20 years older. I think Seguin was 19 at the time. They ran up huge tabs at every nightclub in Boston, and the receipts, you know, were out every morning. It was like, where were Seguin and Marchand last night? And it's funny, even looking back to it, Marchand's talked about it since and said, if I could go back to it, I'd party even harder now, knowing how difficult it is to win the Stanley Cup. But after that, I mean, the Bruins were in that win now mentality where they wanted another cup. And I think that they knew how good Tyler Seguin could be, but it was a very big if. He didn't always fit in with all of the veterans in Boston. You know, this is a guy who was 19 and 20 there, and he was playing on a team with 30-year-olds like Bergeron and Chara and established guys, but much older guys, and it wasn't a great fit, so he gets moved. But that's a trade that,
well,
5-10 years from now is going to look silly.
I'll tell you what, he's matured into quite the player, and that is a great video. You can get that. Is that on NHL.com?
Yes, it is.
You got to check it out if you're a hockey fan. I wanted to bring that up just as a public service announcement here, because the best is where the GoPro falls off his head off that stick.
Yep.
How about the one when he's skating? It looks like he's robotic. You know, it's like when he was moving, and it was kind of off his shoulder, because they don't just chunk it on top of your helmet.
Right.
I mean, they do it in many different angles, correct?
Moving all around. It was
bizarre.
Outstanding. It was,
yeah,
well done.
It was super, super cool. You know, I had a role in Dallas when Todd Harvey was hired.
Oh, yeah? What was it?
A babysitter.
Really? For who?
Mm-hmm. Todd Harvey.
You were his, not necessarily bodyguard, but make sure that he doesn't find his way into trouble.
I was asked by management to make sure he learns that he has a career, and that these are some things he can avoid. How's that?
How was it?
It was fun. It was interesting.
Did he keep you on your toes?
Not really. I mean, he was, you know what? He was actually, I had a lot of respect for him as a person. I think a lot of it was overblown. I think when you're dating your junior coach's daughter, that's
you're asking
Tom Webster,
for trouble.
Tommy Webster, that's a problem, you know? So obviously you're going to carry some extra, but there was some potential for that. And, but I do think when you're bringing players into this league at such young ages, there aren't a lot of, and I don't know what Jonas Brodin's like off the ice, but there's not a lot of hims out there. There's really not. I sense he's probably pretty chill.
Yes, I think that's very fair to say about Brodin. And it's almost easy to forget how young Jonas Brodin is at times.
Really easy.
And, Matt Dumba, of course, is just 20 years old, which is remarkable for everything that he's been doing, especially as a defenseman. We've seen young guys like Sagan and some other teenagers and 20-year-olds, you know, perform as a forward in the NHL, but it's so difficult as a 19 or 20-year-old. And Matt Dumba has been outstanding, and I think is going to be a huge factor going forward into the playoffs and depending on what the Wild can do in there.
Love his ability to take two steps, and he's up in the play and a scoring threat. It's really, really impressive. And he also has the ability to get back and defend, and he does well in the defensive zone. You can see why he was a number one pick.
One quick nugget on Matt Dumba, and this is what I wrote in today's Pioneer Press. He is closer in age, so he sits next to in the locker room, Jordan Leopold. Jordan Leopold, 34 years old. By a couple of months, he is closer in age to Leopold's six-year-old son than his teammate, Jordan Leopold.
Therefore, that means Jordan Leopold could be his father.
Whew,
just about. How about that? Hey, the Stones are coming in town. Was it June 6th or 7th?
Even Keith Richards?
I don't care. I'm there. Yes. if he's not there, I don't go. But yeah. Why? What's wrong with Keith?
Just look at him.
Oh, no. He's like not human.
Yeah.
He reminds me of one of those apples when you were a kid. That apple art you do when the face shrivels up.
Yep.
That's Keith Richards. But what a player.
Yeah.
The three of us have to go to that. We get a big group. I know it's expensive, but we'll figure it out.
Station can pay for it.
Bingo. More coming up. We're going to talk about the Wild roster. It's huge right now. And talk about some of the things they're going to be dealing with in the upcoming segment. All that on the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Welcome back to the On the Ice Radio Show. We're along with Chad Graff. I'm Pete Wagner. And, of course, our producer, David Helmer. And we take a look now at what I would call the ever-bulging Wild roster, Chad, as it went from being completely injury-savaged, ravaged, and depleted to now all these players coming back. We've heard the stories about how full the ice is. I guess that's a good thing. But now there's a lot of decisions. But I just want to play a bit of this interview or this post-practice interview with Mike Yeo. I found it quite comical because it began with Jason Zucker, who's now had his timetable sped up to being sometime in May to perhaps one of the last couple games of the regular season. And then there was a barrage of other questions about players and their health being ready, and Matt Cook and Bergenheim and Suter. Just to take a listen. I find it quite comical.
The sprint that we were in, but then the layoff was a little bit of a slow start. And, a good team, a pressure team like that, they'll recognize that. I think they took advantage of it. But for the most part, thought we found our game after that. And it's tough to give up a 2-0 lead. But I thought that for the most part, we took the attack to them after that.
Even being the Rangers, is it hard to get up for a game against an Eastern Conference team after the layoff, after the run that you've been?
Well, just kind of my message was my two biggest concerns. I mean, obviously, that's a great team, and I knew they were going to be playing hard. They had a chance to clinch their division tonight, but I thought our two biggest challenges were, number one, the layoff, and number two, the cushion that we built and all the questions we've had to answer about, the playoffs and all these things going forward. So, with all the urgency that we've had and all the amount of games that we've had, it's been, I don't want to say it's been easier for us to prepare, but it's been, you don't have to look too far back to remember the things that you're doing, that are making you successful, and obviously with a layoff like this, it's a little bit more challenging.
So what do we do here now, Chad? I mean, obviously, we've talked so much about line combos and chemistry and, it really looking right for so long, lines 1 through 4, top 6 through bottom 6, however you want to call it. Now we get into the position where, do you disrupt the apple cart?
Well, I think you have to a little bit. I think that Jason Zucker has warranted the ability to come back in whenever he is ready, and I think that you know, he'll start at a lower role. But by the time the playoffs start, if Jason Zucker is able to come back next week, if he's able to play in some of these final games, then I think that he slots himself into that second line with Mikko Koivu and Chris Stewart. That bumps, you know, Niederreiter down to joining Charlie Coyle and Thomas Vanek. That slots Justin Fontaine down to the fourth line, who presumably you have with Brodziak. And then it's Fontaine and Brodziak, and you've got a handful
of five
or so guys.
How about that?
Why don't you like it?
I like what they got. I'm not a big tinker guy. I'm not a lineologist as a coach. And you know, I'm not trying to tell anybody how to do their job. But Justin Fontaine, what does he have, 15 points in 19 games? And Vanek has really kicked it up. And, I mean, there's some sort of chemistry there. I get what you're saying, and it's most likely going to happen. I'm just saying from my I don't fear change, but my lack of desire to change, how about that? That makes me a little bit concerned. I mean, just because it's working. And this is not a knock on Jason Zucker, but things weren't really going too well when he was in the lineup at the time. It's not his fault, but I'm just saying whatever they've done now is working.
I'll give you that, but look at what Jason Zucker did. Jason Zucker scored 18 goals in 48 games. This was his breakout season. I mean, we were sitting here, and he was one of the only players that was doing anything at one point. And this is a tough injury, and it's the same one that Patrick Kane is going through, and you know, who knows, the Wild could end up playing Chicago in the first round, and maybe Patrick Kane is able to come back from that. But it's a tough injury. He's been able to skate for a while, but you know, because it's a broken bone, he wasn't cleared for contact, as Mike Yost said, until yesterday. So he's still just getting back into it, and I think it'll be interesting to see how these last couple games next week, the last couple games of the regular season go for him, because for him, it's almost like spring training of sorts to get ready for the playoffs and see where he can be for the playoffs.
Well, really a wild win, and that Los Angeles Kings loss all but locks it up, correct? I mean, they're in then.
Right. I mean, at this point, it's
a 99.999%.
Yes, it would have to be quite the collapse for them not to get in.
Quite the surge from somebody else. So,
right.
So with that said, I just, you know, can a guy that's been on the shelf that long step into what this team's been doing for so long and make an impact and have a difference?
Well,
I don't know.
It's not just Zucker either. I mean, the big questions on the fourth line is, does Matt Cook come back and play for the playoffs?
And this
is
a guy. Does he take?
Right. And then, you know, somebody's got to come out. Eric Howla is coming in tonight. Ryan Carter's coming out tonight. Jordan Schrader's another guy on the fourth line who could find himself out. There are a ton of options, and that's a good thing, but it also leaves you, you know, the Wild, as you mentioned, during this very hot stretch since January 14th, the top nine has been almost identical throughout, at least in the last 25 games or so.
And I've liked that because I think that's continuity. And really your decor, you know, you talked so much about that earlier,
right,
about how often do they have their top four intact? That's pretty much working, too.
Well, that's working. And the big thing now, I think one of the things that when you look at all the guys coming back healthy, one of the definite positives is Nate Prosser back healthy. Nate Prosser was playing so, so well for the Wild before his injury. And so now you've got your top four, which we know all about, Brodin and Suter doing their thing and eating huge minutes and skating so well. Scandella and Spurgeon providing some offense, being a very good second defensive pairing. But then all of a sudden, your third defensive pairing is Matt Dumba, who, in my opinion, has been outstanding over the last 10-15 games. And then also Nate Prosser now back and healthy. And Prosser provides a little bit of grit. And playing on the left side, he was tremendous, I thought, earlier this season.
Now, Suter was out for what was termed maintenance issues. What does that mean exactly?
Who knows what that means? It means that he, a guy that plays
oil
as
change,
many, it could
filter.
Be anything. I mean, it is at least a little bit alarming that we're this late in the season, but at the same time, Suter gets the benefit of the doubt over pretty much any player.
I'll tell you what, a guy that was loafing toward that icing at late in the game when you needed a face-off deep in their own zone, didn't get the icing call, would I snapped at that. I don't care how good you are, how great you are. I don't care if you're a squirt player, a pro player. That was pathetic, and there's no excuse for it. I don't want to hear I'm pacing myself. That was BS, and I lost it. That was a critical race to a puck. You don't lose those.
Those icings became a huge deal in the locker room after people were complaining. Everybody in the Wild locker room thought that they were screwed in terms of the icing department and the referees and linesmen not giving them opportunities.
If I were the linesman, I would have screwed him on that lack of effort too.
Yeah.
He deserved to lose that race. That was embarrassing.
Well, that went on all night. There was something all night between those linesmen and all of the Wild players.
So you're working they got screwed.
I'm not. That's what they were. My opinion.
What's your opinion from what you saw?
If it's an icing call, either beat the guy there or don't complain. And if you get there, don't stand and, you know, act like obviously it was an icing. But I mean,
there was one other one in the second period or maybe third. I think it was with Fontaine that looked a little bit dicey. But this is the end of the game. There's a puck that goes in the corner, and you got a guy that's exhausted or looking like it's standing straight up, just sort of tooling, thinking he can just sort of get there, and there's someone coming on hard from the New York Rangers. Suddenly kicks it into gear, almost won the race. Maybe it was close, but that race was created to be too close. You have only yourself to blame. And if I'm you in that locker room, I'm rolling my eyes going, really? Were you rolling your eyes, or were you good?
A little bit rolling my eye. I mean, any time that players in a regular season game like that complain about officiating, there are times that they have benefited greatly from that. It all evens out. And
I know.
I don't love when players or anybody complain about that. You know, even complaining about everybody was all over the 2 minute, it turned into a 4 minute high stick call. There was clearly blood. It doesn't matter whether you think he legitimately got him that well or not, that there was blood. It's 4 minutes. That's how it works.
And we talked about it in the first segment, you know, when that puck was flipped over, how I absolutely hate that rule. We've already gone over that. So we fully understand that. But, you know, that could have been a major turning point in the game, and it maybe helped the Wild, as we discussed. But yeah, those are some things that I noticed, so I had to point that out, because that was just, when I tell my players, my young kids even, simple things. You can control what you can't control. That's your effort. And you win every race to every puck, and you win all your one-on-one battles. You do that, you're successful.
Well, to go off that four-minute power play, I mean, the penalty kill has been tremendous for the Wild. It ranks number one in the league. That's been their bread and butter all season. Going back to, you know, all of these injuries coming back, when you're making these moves, when Eric Howell is coming out of the lineup, when you're talking about whether Brodziak should be in, whether Carter should be in, whether Cook should be in, these are all penalty killers. Whoever is on your fourth line is going to be on the penalty kill.
You can only have two up front, though, or 4K, right?
Well, right, but, I mean, whatever your fourth line is, their identity has to be players who can kill penalties. And
skate.
And so maybe Schrader could provide a little more 5-on-5. Maybe Cook could provide some different things 5-on-5. But I don't know how much you want to mess with what has been an outstanding penalty kill.
I agree. Number one in the league. I think next week you and I are going to have a come to Jesus between the two of us on what we think the lineup should be and go from there.
Game one lineup.
Yeah, I want your lines and D, and maybe we'll go to callers on that one too and get their lines and D. Boy, that will be riveting when I'm talking. I think that's just, you can beat it into the ground. So wouldn't that be fun to do though?
1 hour of nonstop playoff hockey talk. We've got the Zucker, Koivu, Stewart line and all the pros and cons we can find there.
Absolutely. And beat it into the ground. Boy, I got to credit this team for all the great things they've done. We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. Dave Helmer and I are going to take a look around the NHL. You, my friend, have to take off for the pre-game skate.
Early game start. Tonight, 6 p.m. start means an early morning skate.
Is this an Easter thing, or is this
I don't know what
TV
this is. I didn't know about this until a couple days ago.
Or is it because it's Detroit and we want the game time to be at 7 because it's the Wings?
Maybe that's what it is. Who knows what it is?
You know, they get preferential treatment.
They always do it. I mean, all these Eastern teams,
Hockey
the Rangers,
town.
The Flyers, the Bruins,
coming
the Red
from
Wings.
An Eastern guy.
Well.
No, but it's true, don't they?
They do. It's absolutely true. Look how many afternoon games and primetime games they play. Anytime you
so
turn
tired,
on NBC to watch a hockey game, the Rangers are in it, or the Bruins are in it, or the Penguins are in it. One of those teams
Before
are in
Before we
it.
Go to break, quick question for you. Why? Okay, so the Hawks were in Winnipeg.
Right.
What a game that would be. That was last week. Why can we not get that on NBC Sports Network?
And it was it was one of the best games I've seen this season.
I'd say it's the best game.
It was
terrific. Incredible. Okay, that is a great marketing piece for hockey. You and I know how great that building is up at MTS Center.
Yep.
Things unreal. It translates to great, great theater, great games, great TV, the whole thing. Oh, no. But now, you know, we never put a Canadian team on. Why is that?
Well, Chicago will be on there, but Winnipeg's not the big draw for NBC, and nobody in America cares about that, they say. So,
but nobody
on
cares
it goes.
About the others. We're sick of them. We'll be back with more. It's the On the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Yeah. Song That Rocks for Bart Archer. Daniel Wagner, hello to you out there. I know you're going to some sort of golf course out there. So you're going to be knocking them around. Bart, good morning.
Good morning.
So we got a good one for you. First, before we get into, we're going to talk about the greatest European-born player ever in the history of the National Hockey League. And when I thought of that, I thought of you immediately because it takes us back to our fantasy hockey days back in 1985 at the University of Minnesota at Kauffman Union. And we created one heck of a league that I have since resigned from about 15 years ago, but still lives on today. And we had to do all of this stuff manually. But along with that came a long list of European players who started flooding into the National Hockey League. And I want you to think about that for a minute, of who your greatest European-born player in the NHL history is. We're going to get to that in a second. Okay. But David Helmer, our producer, you had a couple of talkers. You know, one of the things that you wanted to bring up were the Anaheim Ducks' soft schedule down the stretch.
Yeah, they do have a pretty soft schedule. A lot of people are worried the Wild do not want to face Anaheim. That's been something that a lot of people have said. But Anaheim's closing it out with New Jersey. Then they beat Edmonton. They just lost to Colorado, then they play the Dallas Stars and finish with the Arizona Coyotes in Arizona. And those are the four weakest teams in the Western Conference. Are they not going to be challenged enough down the stretch, and are they going to be a little soft come the first round of the playoffs?
So your call is that they're playing against teams that aren't really playing for anything, and that they may get into less of a playoff atmosphere, if you will, and less of the tempo and pace. Will they get dragged down? Quite possible. Bart, what are your thoughts?
Well, my thought would hopefully be that they're professionals and they'd show up and play an inspired game for the people that paid the ticket, and I'd trust that they'd do that. But, you know, would complacency fit in? If they had too easy of a ride, would it really kind of take the edge off their game? So, I don't know. I just say you see the opponent in front of you regardless of the sweater and just go out and play your game and play to the best of your abilities, and things will fall into place. I don't care who we play. Pete, I'd relish playing the Chicago Blackhawks. I heard your statements earlier saying you're tired of them. Well, I say bring it on. I want to get through this. I want to get the demon off my shoulder, so to speak.
Oh, no, I have no problem with the Minnesota Wild playing them. I'm tired of every time I turn on a rivalry night. Every
right.
time, I mean, there are, you know what? Please, please. I don't care. I mean, you know, it's enough. Just for lack of better terms, sick of them. And, you know, they're a fine outfit. They're a fine team. But, you know, if they're going to play somebody and if you're going to shove them down my throat,
yeah.
Don't give me a non-conference game with Pittsburgh and Chicago. I don't care. And you tell me that the people out here that are listening to this show who are hockey fans, you know, for some reason they think they're going to get these casual observers that are going to secretly come in and watch a game and, you know. I don't know. For some reason, they just cannot put a team from the Canadian markets in. I get it because, you know, they don't get it or whatever, so we got to keep it to the borders. But I'm telling you, as a hockey fan, I would watch those teams playing teams from the States very easily. Let's get on to the – oh, go ahead.
Oh, we have a phone call. We're going to go to Chad and Blaine has a question about the matchups.
Chad and Blaine, thanks for joining on the Ice Radio Show. How are you?
Good. So I have a couple related questions. Number one, you guys are talking about lineups. Won't the lineup dictate, depending on who we play, you know, versus like if we're playing a very, very physical team that, you know, roughs us up, once you want Cookie and Carter, Stewart, you want those bigger guys out there to counter that.
It's a very, very good point. And, you know, what you've done as an organization is you give yourself a lot of flexibility and the opportunity to go with a heavier lineup if you have it. You know, part of my thing is that, you know, and Chad, my feeling is there's been so much energy created by what they've been running with now, regardless of what type of team they've played against. It goes back to the first segment when we were talking about Alain Vigneault saying, and what I agree with, there is no such thing as a road game or a home game. You play the best way. You play the game the right way, you'll get the results. So that's my only concern when I was talking about that is I like what's going on right now. I love Matt Cook. I love all of these guys. But what's out there is working was more my concern.
But, I mean, if we get stuck playing Anaheim, they're a bigger team than us. I mean Schrader, I mean, all these guys and Zucker, I mean, those, I know they're faster, but, I mean, physicality ends up taking a pretty heavy toll in a seven-game series.
I agree with you, and that's that makes a lot of sense, and we appreciate your call, Chad, and he makes a good point there, Bart Archer.
Well, yeah, in fact, that's something that I think the depth of the Wild gives them the diversity to be able to put a proper lineup in. If they're playing a speed team like I think we saw against the Rangers, obviously they're not going to see them unless the best case scenario comes up, really. But you have the option of speed if you need the speed. But you have some brawn. I mean, you have even the acquisition of like a Bergenheim. He might not be that effective offensively. He might chip in, but he can play a bigger game. You have Carter coming back. Stewart makes everybody play a little bit bigger. That way with Stewart, you don't really sacrifice speed, but everybody plays a little bigger. So I say Anaheim, yes, they're a bigger team. But you know, and they have a great goaltending too, so that would be obviously a challenge. But I think the Wild can really play with anybody in the West.
I agree. I think they've proven they can play with anybody in the league, and I say bring it on at that stage. Okay, let's get on to the greatest European-born player in NHL history. The NHL.com had these options for you: Jaromir Jagr, Nick Lidstrom, Alexander Ovechkin, Timo Solani, or Dominik Hasek. Who, Bart Archer, in your opinion, is the greatest European-born player in NHL history?
Jaromir Jagr.
Boy, you didn't even think about it.
No, well, in fact, going into it, the thought that was in the back of my mind was Peter Stastny.
I was right there with you.
Well, he's the first player to come in as a rookie. I'm not saying he's the only one, but the first one to come in and score 100 goals, or not 100 goals, I'm sorry, 100 points. But I would venture to say Jagr, but I have so much respect for Lidstrom and Solani. I mean, Solani coming in since scoring 76. You know, that's a difficult question. I'm biased, but Jaromir Jagr's done it for 20 years. He was a significant part of many Stanley Cup winners. He's still a desired commodity in his 40s. People want him on his team. He's a great mentor. He's a great ambassador for the game. I think the overall package, other than that haircut, I think it's Jaromir Jagr.
Oh, he's chirping the haircut. The haircut's always been a bit of a struggle. He's got that kind of curly wave thing going on. So, by the way, Carl from Eden Prairie is listening in. I'd like to say hi to him, by the way. Hello, Carl from Eden Prairie. Just sent me a quick note there. I would agree. Peter Stastny might have been the most skilled European player. What about Peter Forsberg, Dave Helmer? You brought him up.
Absolutely.
Dave?
Yeah, I always liked him. The pairing of him and Sakic seemed unstoppable.
What about Börje Salming, really the guy that was the trailblazer?
That's the other guy that I was talking about. Think of the step that he took into the period that he was playing in, a very rough and tumble physical period, really kind of stepping into something very foreign to him other than the hockey part of it, and to have that great of success and impact in such a hockey town, his journey was incredible.
I'm going to say Miroslav Fritcher, Peter Inicek, or Ilkka Sinisalo. Does that work for you?
Darn, I wanted to work Fritcher in, but Peter Kleen has got to be in the mix somewhere.
The first guy that brought the candy cane stick tape to the mix is Peter Kleen. I remember that?
Yes, indeed. But the name
and the toilet bowl helmet.
Name, the best European name still, Pete, is Håkan Lube.
Oh, former Calgary Flame and teammate of our good friend Paul Ranheim.
How about that?
That's amazing. So, but I'm that fun talker to go there. And, when you look at matchups, to the Western Conference, Chad Graff and I were speaking, and our caller Carl had the same point. If they do play Anaheim, that's a very physical team. It's been a team that's played very well here at the XL Energy Center against the Minnesota Wild. The other teams in the mix, though, all three in the Central, Chicago, St. Louis, and Nashville, from 3-2-1, all have the potential to win the Western Conference title. Each one of them have two games in hand on the Anaheim Ducks. Nashville and St. Louis, if they win those two games, are tied with them. So, the schedule favors Anaheim. Minnesota plays all three of those teams to close out the year, all on the road, at Chicago, at Nashville, and at St. Louis later on in the week. So, those are all things Minnesota can help themselves with if they want to face one of those teams and give Anaheim a shot at winning the Western Conference title.
The way I look at it is it's the one game at a time cliche. Don't look too far ahead. And that's what would worry me in the locker room. And I know the Wild and Coach Yeo have everybody on point. But just the next game in front of you is the most important game, whether it's St. Louis, whether it's Nashville. Those are going to be great hockey games. It's the most fantastic time of the year is the playoff stretch and then the playoffs coming. But it's just take care of your business. I say bring it on. St. Louis worries me because they're so streaky. You know, they can reel off, you know, five, six wins in a row, but then they lose.
Bart, they've taken such dumps in the playoffs the past few years. I mean, this team has just been atrocious in the playoffs. Their goaltending situation, I've been saying for the last couple of weeks, you know, Elliott's solid, and Jake Allen's not bad either, but those guys have never gotten it done over the recent years, and I'm not saying that this year would be exactly the same, but why would it be any different? Nashville is very beatable. Chicago is beatable. I agree with you. Bring it on. And one thing you never have to worry about, those guys are professionals. The looking ahead is left for myself, Chad Graff, David Helmer, and you. That's what we're here to do.
Well, like I said, it's the best time of year because everybody's playing inspired. And I think that even playing against the Phoenix on the last day of the season, they want to finish on an up note. The best way to feel good about your season after you've been eliminated is at least finish with some positive energy. So I think they're going to give them a pretty good contest. So Anaheim, by all means, has a easier schedule, but I don't think it's a cakewalk.
I'm sure Bobby Gibbons, our good friend out at the Honda Center, will have plenty of information for us, too, as well. Bart, thanks for joining us this morning. Late notice. Appreciate it.
No, call me anytime. It's always a pleasure. Great show. A very quick hour, and I appreciate what you do, Pete.
Thanks, Bart. By the way, don't be shy. Check us out at 11 o'clock. We're going to have the On Deck Radio, also one-and-done basketball action with Marcus Fuller and the crew right here at the Sports Radio 105, the Ticket Studios. The Detroit Red Wings are in town tonight, 6 o'clock with the Minnesota Wild. The Wings, with 93 points on 77 games played, will be looking to, if they can pick up some points, nail down a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference.
Well, I think if the Wild get it done tonight, they get it done against Winnipeg, and that clinches us a spot. We don't have to worry about anything anymore.
Can you imagine how far we've come?
It is tough to fathom, but...
Grinding and gnashing of teeth, pounding of breasts, the whole thing in this very studio in the early parts of January to straight springtime Stanley Cup playoff bliss.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Well, here we come.
Thanks, David. Chad Graff, hopefully you got to the rink safe for the pregame skate. That's going to do it. We'll be right back on the air with this. One and Done is next. This was On the Ice Radio Show. So long, everybody.